Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome back to Today Your Love, Tomorrow the World Series. My name is Brian. Me, as always, is Chris. And Chris, we recorded this podcast last week directly after the Max Scherzer trade or right before the Max Scherzer trade? I can't remember now.
Oh, that is a good question.
I think it was before.
Yeah, I think it was before.
Yeah, so they had traded David Robertson, and we were debating who was going to get traded for the rest of the time before the deadline. And boy, did we get it wrong. I had said Verlander was staying put. Verlander and Scherzer were both moved, along with Dominic Leone, a name I saw nowhere in any trade deadline coverage, as well as Tommy Pham and Mark Canna. And look, I there's a lot of complicated feelings that come from all areas of this, but I want to start at just sort of the baseline where we begin the show every week, which is the vibe check. So how you're feeling about the Mets. Now, I know that you and I are typically slower to close the door on a season than others are, but do you feel like right now the Mets have slammed the door shut on being competitive for 2023?
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair assessment. I don't know. I guess I always try to find the optimistic take when it comes to the Mets, and the Major League Mets are a lost cause right now. But if they're going to be a lost cause, rather go this way than hang around, you'd finish the season at or just under 500. Maybe today they'd be four games back of the third wild card instead of seven or whatever it is. Yeah, I don't know. If you're not going to make the cut, then going all in on just a revamp of the organization, I think that's a good strategy to take. So the Major League team right now is, I've questioned why I've been watching it over the last few days. I mean, there's some sense that I'm still going to miss this when the off season hits, much sooner for the Mets than, you know, 12 other teams in baseball. But, it's still nice to listen to Gary, Keith, and Ron. Really, really nice to listen to Gary, especially over the last few days, with him having taken a series off. But yeah, no, it's not a good feel around the Major League team right now.
Yeah, and I guess this is the time to talk about it. Before we get into the trades sort of specifically and who is gone and who is brought in and all of that, I find it a little bit shocking how quickly this team has gone from below average baseball team to absolutely unwatchable baseball team, because the players that were traded away for the most part were either role players or pitchers. And not that, you know, look, today Tyler McGill is going to start for the Mets, and that might be an absolute disaster, in which case we will certainly miss Max Scherzer or Justin Verlander today. But on a Kodai Senga start, there is no reason that we should really be feeling the absence of those other two starting pitchers. And yet this team, I mean, I was at the game on Sunday, my first Mets game of the year. Verlander pitched. It was a very good game. It was, just on a personal note, perhaps the most beautiful day I've ever spent at the ballpark. Just the perfect temperature. We were in the shade where we were sitting. Just an absolutely gorgeous day. But the team was playing well-ish. And, you know, it seemed like they're probably going to sell. But, you know, maybe they would be not terrible for the final, you know, 7 weeks of the season or 9 weeks of the season, whatever it is. And yet, almost as soon as the trades were done, the Mets just turned into a pumpkin and have looked absolutely unwatchable. Now, part of that is that for three games, they lost Brandon Nimmo to some discomfort that was, you know, they were keeping him out mainly as a precaution. Part of it is that you are getting players like DJ Stewart playing every day now, or most days now, and Rafael Ortega, just players that probably shouldn't be playing every day in the major leagues in 2023, And, you know, so you're going to have a couple of those, couple of extra of those spots in the lineup. But it seems like it's kind of even gotten deeper than that. Was I overstating this team's talent that by taking away a couple of, by taking away Mark Canha and Tommy Pham, the offense is going to totally die? Or are you similarly shocked by the utter destruction of the offense over the past week?
Yeah, I guess I'd probably just chalk it up more to everyone in that clubhouse having the balloon popped.
Sure.
And I think to some extent, players, you know, from our perspective, we hear them after or before or after a game when things aren't going well and all the baseball cliches come out, you know, whether it's on us to play better one day at a time type things. We believe in the talent in the, that we have here in the room. All those sorts of things get said. And I think a lot of the time we take it as they're saying what they have to say. And maybe it is some of that, but I think there also has to be some level of, to borrow from different forms of entertainment, suspension of disbelief, right? Like, I think the players in any clubhouse, especially one that came into the season with such high expectations, kind of have to believe that things are going to turn around. So I'd be curious. Some of the lineups too, I think we're going to see more rest for some of the Mets' better players than we normally would over the last couple months of the season. But yeah, I think it's a combination of all that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder, you know, on one hand, I think it would make sense that on a team like, and I'm trying to think of a team. It's funny. My go-to for years when I'm talking about bad teams have been the Reds and the Orioles, both of whom are in playoff positions right now. So let's talk about the Nationals, a team that came into the year knowing they were going to be bad. I think for some of those players, they say the things you're talking about. You know, we believe in the talent we have on the field. It's on us to hit better. I didn't execute my pitches. I shouldn't, you know, I think they believe those things, but they believe them with a wink, which is that they are saying the expectation of this season was always going to be not great. And so we're playing out the string here. We're going to try our best, but we're not surprised when we're doing bad. I think that's definitely true. But I also think for some of these players that maybe to play it, to be the best you can on the field, you have to believe that stuff. There has to be some sort of, if you don't believe you're capable of greatness, then you can't get yourself fired up for the game that day. So I don't know if the players are the first or the last to know this stuff, right? And I also think that even though we were talking about the Mets being sellers on the pod last week, I think the degree to which they were sellers surprised people. And I think that a lot of folks feel that the trading of Justin Verlander is, in a sense, punting on 2024. And the team has not said that. The team has said they will be competitive next year, but they're really looking to 2025 for the the next real big splash. I believe that to a certain degree, but I also think that if the Mets got the feeling at the winter meetings that Shohei Ohtani would take just the biggest contract offered, they would offer him the biggest contract available. I think Cohen's money means they're never really punting on a season. I know folks are going to call me a homer or a Pollyanna or whatever for believing that, but I just, nothing about that guy says to me that he is not going to try and field a good team every single year. Do you agree with that?
Oh, I totally agree. So the difference between what you heard from Scherzer and Verlander in terms of like their comments about having been traded and what their conversations were like and all that, I think part of that is a difference in personality with the two of them, but I don't know. I think that was a good way to get Max Scherzer to say that he was willing to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And look, he's not an idiot. I don't think he could necessarily just be manipulated that easily. If that is sort of what the Mets were trying to do there, but whatever that conversation was, they sold him on the concept of being traded. So that happened. I have a hard time believing that all of a sudden the offseason is going to hit and Cohen's just going to go, we're just going to wait and see what these prospects can do. I think I've read a variety of opinions and sort of had my own opinion of what maybe they'll do this winter, but I think everybody expects they're going to sign players to try to fill out a roster in such a way that the team can be competitive if things just break reasonably right. This season is not on any one or two players, but I think if you told everyone what Jeff McNeil and Starling Marte's numbers would look like at this point of this season, back on opening day, nobody would have believed that. Right. Just massive drop-off. So I think we have plenty of time to go and look at who the free agent class is, and I think all of us have probably done that a little bit already, but there's plenty of time to sift through it and identify maybe what our preference is for the Mets going into the offseason. But yeah, I can't imagine that they're going to have a Wilpon offseason where it's all fringe guys, waiver pickups. I don't expect a Brad Emaus situation
good
to
call.
Come out of this.
A Chunlin Hu, perhaps?
Yeah. So yeah, I'll believe him when I see it. And if they're really going to punt, I do understand the reaction that trading Verlander was sort of a significant step in determining what next season is going to be. But it doesn't mean it's impossible. And look, Verlander's comments after he left, and to be clear, Scherzer's, I didn't think we're like lacking class or anything. I think it's just a different person and a different way of communicating. But Verlander was just went high road, all class, specifically said that he thought the Mets could be competitive even in his absence in short order. But I think the Mets hit a point where it was like, okay, we tried this $86 million experiment with two Hall of Fame pitchers. Didn't work out as a package deal. And it's not just on them. I mean, Verlander has essentially was living up to his deal aside from having been hurt early in the year. He wasn't contending for the Cy Young, but certainly pitching well enough that you're not going to, cry over dollars per win.
Right.
Type stuff. Scherzer obviously was a little disappointing, but I think you could have kept Verlander and been on a little more of a like medium ground between farm system replenishment and what the major league roster looks like. So I this is all like a long-winded way of trying not to sound too much like I'm rationalizing on behalf of the Mets, but and I don't say this lightly, replacing 2024 Verlander and Scherzer might not be as difficult as it sounds based on their names.
Absolutely agreed.
So that's if they had kept them, I would have been, look, these are future Hall of Famers. They might find a tweak. They might find a way. Don't write them off. And for the Rangers and Astros, I wouldn't write them off either. I know there's been that difference between the two of them and their performance this year, but if October rolls around and those guys are putting up good starts in the playoffs, nobody should be shocked. But If Verlander's a low threes ERA guy and Scherzer's a low fours ERA guy, and the innings total isn't 200 plus anymore. I mean, that's been a topic a lot this season, that it's just not even, it's rarely happening at all. Never mind regularly.
Right.
But you start to look at free agency and say, hey, you know, maybe there's a way that Jordan Montgomery is one guy who's sort of caught my eye. He also was traded at the deadline. Solid major league starting pitcher. Maybe he's taking a step forward. He's 30 years old. And that's somebody who in a Wilpon offseason I might look at and be like, wow, that's the ceiling. Maybe they can get him and mix him in with the guys who are already in the organization. And yeah, that's not a super young pitcher, but when you take a decade off the age, the difference between somebody like him and Scherzer next year might not be that much. And yeah, I don't know. I if we're wrong, if they do really nothing this offseason and they go into next season with the team looking more like it does today, then okay, then we adjust our expectations and you know, our emotional investment in that version of the major league team.
Right.
But yeah, I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I can't imagine that the lineup is gonna look this depleted on opening day. I can't imagine that we're gonna have to fill 2 to 3 roster spots with the likes of David Peterson and Tyler McGill and possibly Joey Lucchese, who, just quick aside here, justice for Lucchese, give that guy some starts. He's better than Tyler McGill, I believe. But that's just me. I tend to think that next season, what I think they were trying to tell Verlander and Scherzer, besides just, hey, wave your claws so we can trade you and replenish our farm system, was just that maybe this isn't the year that we spend, that we go this high over the luxury threshold again in order to win. Maybe this offseason we're not going to be looking to, you know, bring in every major free agent that we can get a hand on. Which they, you know, a lot was made about how many players the Mets, or how much money the Mets were spending this offseason. But ultimately, outside of Scherzer and Verlander, nobody was, I guess Senga was brought in on a big money deal, but Senga's deal is not, I mean, Senga's doing very well. I'm very happy with Senga's contract. If Senga was performing not quite this well, you wouldn't look at that contract and say, oh, what an albatross around our neck that contract is, right? The Mets, right. There was a lot of money spent, don't get me wrong, but aside from Verlander and the money already owed to Scherzer, it wasn't like they were spending unsustainable, gigantic pools of money on players that didn't work out. The players they traded away that were signed this offseason, Verlander, as you said, was living up to his contract. David Robertson was exceeding expectations on his contract. Tommy Pham was probably tenfold exceeding expectations on his contract. You know, Dominic Leone was picked up for nothing and wound up being traded for a potentially interesting prospect, although probably the least interesting of the ones that were picked up. But, you know, just there it wasn't like this was a total, total throwaway of the offseason at the trade deadline. That's not really what happened. The players who were traded, who they signed, were doing well. This team had bigger issues than the payroll. And that's, to me, that's the key when talking about it. But let's very quickly talk about what the Mets brought back for all of these players. The short answer is that the Mets completely remade their farm system. I had a quick chat with two of our friends from Complex to Queens. You'll hear them talk about this in detail next week. but or I guess tomorrow when you listen to this or the day after, you know, the Mets brought in eight prospects at the deadline. Six of those prospects are no doubt top 20 prospects in the system. Of those six, four of them are top 10 and three of them are top five. I mean, according to Lucas and Thomas, the Mets went from a possibly bottom three system in all of baseball to minimum top half system in baseball. That just doesn't happen overnight usually. The Mets got an incredible influx of talent this deadline. And I understand that prospects are not the same as bringing in, you know, established major league talent. A lot of these guys are not going to be ready for two or three or 4 years and maybe will never quite be what we're hoping they're going to be. That's just the nature of prospects in baseball. But this does two things for the Mets. And anyone who really knows baseball knows these things, but you and I were talking the other day about how people can't seem to see this. In addition to these players possibly being future all-stars, future important pieces of the Mets, these players can also be traded for other players. And these players might be the linchpin that delivers, I'm going to make it up, I'm going to say Mike Trout to the Mets next season, which is not going to happen, but let's just, you know, let's pretend here. When you have a stocked farm system, it's not about every single prospect hitting and becoming a star. It's about finding a time, or rather finding a way to turn those players into the best thing, you getting the best possible return for those players, whether that's their actual talent or using them in a trade elsewhere. And so, is it sad that the Mets punted on the season? Absolutely. But like you said, I don't think replacing the guys traded away, not replacing their names, but replacing their actual talent on the field in 2024 is as tough as people are maybe thinking it is. And I think there's almost no other way for a team to rebuild their farm system so quickly than to do what the Mets did. And the Mets didn't even go extreme. Look, the Mets could have traded Pete Alonso. It would have been dumb, but they could have done it, and they could have gotten another three or four excellent prospects for him. They could have traded, I don't know, there's lots of them. They could have traded Adam Ottavino for a bag of baseballs. They could have traded Brooks Raley for something. They didn't completely tear down and trade everyone. But what they got from the deadline, I think, has to be commended. And I have been hard on Billy Epler as a GM, but I think that this was a pretty masterful performance of restocking the farm over the last week or so.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And I think what comes to mind for me too, specifically regarding the potential to trade some of these guys away if things go exceptionally well, you know, during next season or even over the offseason if an opportunity presents itself, is that they got highly rated prospects from organizations that have reputations of being really good at player development. Right. And then I think I highly respect the opinions that all of the current From Complex to Queens crew have on the Mets system. Also, you know, the ones that we're very familiar with Amazing Avenue alum at Baseball Prospectus and everything, you know, I think the insight that we all get from them is really, really invaluable as Mets fans. And I think everyone involved in those evaluations, if anything, is, I don't want to say too harsh on the Mets because that's oversimplifying things, but always conscious of not giving the Mets the benefit of the doubt just because they're fans of the major league team and, you know, therefore rooting for the guys who are in the Mets system. But I think there's always this just conscious effort to not be homers that I respect. And I think, you know, it can help keep a check on the perception of the organization. So within baseball, I don't know how Mets player development is really viewed by other executives, other, you know, farm directors, organizations, all that sort of thing. But, you know, bringing in players from these organizations that seem to be generally very highly rated at it, can't hurt. You know, I don't know that a prospect who had established what all of these guys have established at this point in their careers would be discounted if they had come up through the Mets system instead. But there is something about being, having been the Astros' top prospect, right? That organization, even with a cheating scandal under its belt, the organization's operation is generally praised throughout baseball for, you know, knowing what they're doing. So, all of that said, I think bringing in those guys, maybe it's just a little added bonus that they have that background. Obviously, one player is not going to come in and change how an organization runs its farm system. But yeah, just a little thought, a little bonus maybe for having gotten guys from those organizations. So yeah, the future looks good. And hey, on a personal note, with more opportunities to see minor league Mets games in my near term future than major league Mets games, if the Mets weren't going to make the playoffs, I'll gladly take getting to see all these great prospects who weren't in the organization. And catch them before they make their way up.
Yeah. And you know, the Mets have not pulled off a big prospect for superstars trade in a long time. What was the last time the Mets traded a huge? Is it the dreaded Kelenic trade?
Yeah, I guess it would be, right? I mean, some of the moves that they made more recently, it involved minor league players, but not anyone who was in a top 50 or top 100.
Oh, I guess we could count Pete Crow Armstrong for
Baez and
Baez, yeah, and
Trevor Williams,
yeah.
No, that I mean, he hadn't garnered that kind of attention for himself until after the 2022 season,
right?
Obviously, that was a little while after that trade happened, but right. But yeah, that's somebody I guess who is of that caliber.
Yeah, but just the idea of, you know, trading a top prospect for a superstar is something the Mets have not been super active in doing, or have even done much at all in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years. So maybe there's an opportunity for the Mets to use these guys to bring in some player that we can't even imagine now. You know, that's always a possibility. But yeah, so, you know, to recap just a little bit before we wrap up here, I think we're both expecting the Mets to essentially tank for the rest of the season. And we spent about 5 minutes before the show reviewing the current protocols for protected draft picks. And it appears that, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Chris, because you and I were hashing this out, but I'm still not sure I 100% have this correct, that because the Mets were more than $40 million over the luxury tax threshold, they need to have a top six draft pick in order to be protected in the 2024 draft. However, because of the new draft lottery, they are not guaranteed a top six pick if they have a bottom six record. But if they have a bottom six record, they will have the greatest statistical chance of getting a top six pick. Have I stated that correctly?
Yes, as far as far as we've read this morning, that all sounds right to me. And the penalty they're looking at is that pick sliding back by 10, which is the same thing that happened in the draft this year. And if they end up in that protected range, then their second round pick slides back 10 instead, which at that point of the draft is not really a big deal.
Right, right. 10 picks in the second round is not the same as 10 picks in the first round. Going from pick number 3 or 4 to 13 or 14 is a huge penalty in terms of perceived value. We all know, you know, Mike Piazza, one of the last players picked in his draft, Hall of Famer, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of perceived value for draft picks, the top 10 is sort of considered the clear cut best option in the draft going into it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess the upside here is that it's okay. So you want to get out to Citi Field and catch a couple games before the end of the season. You can go root for the Mets. You don't have to root for them to lose every game. And if the post deadline performance is any indication, they might just take care of this all by themselves. But
yes,
they could end up with the 7th, 8th, or 9th worst record in baseball and end up with the 5th or 6th pick. Then everybody's happy, I guess. Right? I mean, like. As happy as can be.
Sure.
So yeah, it's okay. We don't have to root for a full-on tank. And look, if they end up with a protected pick and it's that high in the draft, great. I certainly am not an expert on how good next year's draft class looks. But we've seen that they have taken players, and granted, you know, they've been in different spots in that first round, but they've taken players who have, established that they're legitimate prospects in the first round. So yes. I'm not saying there's no difference between 6 and 16 or 7 and 17. Sorry, because 6 wouldn't slide back, but
right.
But it's not the end of the world if they don't end up there. I understand that people want it since it's a non-playoff season now. But I wouldn't lose sleep over it if it doesn't happen. I guess is where I'm at.
Right. And, you know, with the draft happening later in the season now too, happening at the All-Star break, you're basically not going to see much of these players next year anyway. And so the reason I bring that up is that I think folks are very excited, like you were saying, about going to see these minor league players, and the idea of adding a top 6 draft pick further enhances the system and makes it seem like, oh, maybe next year in Brooklyn we'll get, you know, the first round pick. We may not see the first round pick play a single game of baseball next year because of when the draft is now. But yeah, I want the Mets to maximize their farm system whenever they can, because there is nothing like rooting for a homegrown player. There is nothing like making those huge splash trades, using a prospect. You know, all of these things are just a lot of fun to watch. And yes, free agency is awesome, and I love the fact that Kurt Flood, et cetera, that we have free agency. It is a good thing for everyone involved. And I will always fight for the rights of players to be free agents, yada, yada, yada. You all know what I'm saying. But to remember when a guy was traded, you know, if Luis Angel Acuña turns into an absolute superstar, we can all say, I remember when that guy came over for Max Scherzer from the Rangers, and then we watched him play in the minors. And it's a really nice thing to have these long-term homegrown players. I will always mark out for that. That's always very exciting to me. So we have opportunity here to be optimistic about the next couple of years of Mets baseball. We know that the Mets have been trying to bring in a president of baseball operations since Steve Cohen came on board, and that hasn't happened. It appears, if you listen to the rumors, that a certain executive from a certain team in Milwaukee is up for the job of president of baseball operations, and whose contract just happens to expire at the end of the season. You know, there could be some exciting news in terms of rebuilding the front office. I still think Billy Epler keeps his GM job for another year or so, but having a president of baseball operations who can be a more steady hand at the till and to help the organization just do things like develop a draft philosophy that is better than the one they currently have, to remake the player development system. Specifically, I know people talk about the poor job the Mets do at times in developing their pitchers. So maybe that's something that wants to be addressed. You know, there are things that a president of baseball operations can do that a GM really can't do. And so there is reason to believe that this is the offseason the Mets bring in somebody to really reshape their front office. They have this influx of talent, and Steve Cohen's money isn't going anywhere. So while today is certainly not as happy as if the Mets' offseason plans had gone the way they had hoped it would, I still don't think that this is necessarily the worst possible outcome. Yes, does it feel shitty right now? Absolutely. But I would rather, and I think this is maybe a sign of my illness, my Mets-related illnesses, I would rather be in this position today than to relive the end of the 2007-2008 Mets seasons, when they were in it until the very, very end and then lost everything without making the playoffs. To me, that is more painful than this is. Do you concur with that?
Yeah. Oh, that hits way harder.
Yeah.
Having hope until the last day of the season twice.
Yeah.
Being there in person for both games.
Oof, I'm sorry.
Again, I've mentioned this on the podcast, but I was there for the elimination games in 2006, 7, 8, 15, and 16.
Wow.
I was not there when they were eliminated last year. So yeah. It's not all my fault, but yeah, no, the last game of this season will definitely be easier to swallow than
yes
any of those were.
Yeah. And again, I know that not everyone's going to share my views on that, but I truly believe that we are better off right now than if they had been clawing their way and just missed the wild card at the end of September. Even if the games between now and then would be much better that way. If you're just talking about quality of game, then I agree this is worse. But if you're talking about in terms of emotional well-being, I think this is a better way to go. Anything else to add about this team before we talk about some music?
No, I think that covers it. I think it'll be very interesting to see what we have to talk about over the next 2 months of baseball.
It's true.
But stay tuned. We'll come up with something.
Yeah. So what is your music pick for this week?
So I was trying to avoid going to, a band that I've recommended before. But the Budos band, I caught them live for the second time earlier this summer. They were pretty great. And they put out a new EP. And it's just really good. So I'm going to revisit that well and recommend it. You can get a 12-inch vinyl of it if you're so inclined. And it's, it's just a few tracks, as is typically the case with an EP. But it's called Frontier's Edge. And basically, if you've been listening for a long time and you listen to that other Budos band recommendation from many episodes ago, hey, why not listen some more? But if you haven't, Budos band are just a lot of fun and one of my favorite combinations of just sort of guitar and bass driven music that has a lot of horns and like that sounds like such a simple explanation of it.
You love ska, but, I get it.
Yeah. So if you don't love ska, although if you spend a lot of time, if you spend enough time in Massachusetts, I think Brian, you had actually made the joke that you're contractually obligated to hear the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones.
Yeah.
But Budos Band had been on Daptone Records out of Brooklyn for like 20 years. They went out and started their own label called Diamond West, Records or Recordings, or I forget the official title off the top of my head, but this is their first release on the label that they created. Everything about this venture sounded like it was very harmonious, and it was just sort of their next phase. And they put this out as the first release from their band on that label, which is always a cool and exciting thing for a band to get to do. So obviously the most important thing here is that the music is really good. And you know, they played off of this when I saw them earlier this summer. And there's no bad time of year for it, but we often talk about music fitting a season, and their music goes very, very well with warm weather for me. So check it out.
Yeah. It's funny that you talk about warm weather. I feel like my pick would actually be better for the winter, but it's something I've been listening to a lot lately. It is a local to New York City / Northern New Jersey band. They're called the Royal Arctic Institute. I don't know if the winter thing is just because they have Arctic in the title, and so I think of it in terms of cold weather. But they are an instrumental rock band from the aforementioned New York City / Northern New Jersey. They put out two EPs over the last, I guess it was 2 years or so. One of them was called From Catnip to Coma, and the second one was called From Coma to Catharsis. And they are releasing both as a single vinyl LP. I believe it's this month now. They're playing some shows in the area to celebrate it. I'm hoping to get to one of them. They're playing at a very cool place about 30 minutes from me that is a coffee shop / record store. And they're playing there a show to celebrate the vinyl release. But it's if you sort of look at their socials and that, they will describe themselves as post-punk or cinematic jazz, and both of those make sense to me. They're instrumental music that is very it is not super flashy in terms of, I think sometimes people hear jazz and they picture someone like blowing a crazy solo, and that is not how this band operates. A lot of it is more atmospheric and slower, but also really really interesting and engaging. The word cinematic is a good way to put it. It does sometimes sound like music from a film, but I really, really enjoy it. There is guitar, bass, keyboards, drums, and occasionally got some pedal steel guitar, and I love pedal steel guitar. It's one of my favorite little touches that a band can put on an album. For those that have never seen, if you ever want to just be impressed, just look up somebody playing pedal steel guitar on YouTube. Because not only are you using both of your hands, you're also using your feet and both of your knees to play it. Because there are knobs you play with your knees and pedals you play with your feet. And then you're doing this stuff with your hands. It is, watching someone play pedal steel well is a marvel. And this band just makes music that is really perfect for whether it's like late at night or early in the morning with your coffee. Or it just gives me a really, really interesting, enjoyable, chilled out sound. And you know, I mentioned before, I think it's maybe more winter music, but I also think that a lot of times when it's very hot and very humid, I want some sort of chilled out music. So maybe this is the perfect summer record, I don't know. But the most recent of the two EPs, and my favorite of the two, is called From Coma to Catharsis. Like I said, you can pick up the double the vinyl of both those EPs together real soon. But yeah, that's my pick, the Royal Arctic Institute, From Coma to Catharsis. And as always, we thank you for listening. This was an interesting week of Mets fandom, and hopefully you were following along with us either through our podcast or on AmazingAvenue.com, and we hope that you continue to do both of those things. please go to patreon.com/homerandapplesauce to support this podcast directly. Chris, where are your socials now? You're on Twitter and Threads, technically?
Yeah, Twitter, Threads, Instagram, at Chris McShane. Varying degrees of activity.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're all there.
Yeah. All those plus Blue Sky for me at Brian Intanap. I did have some like 3 in the morning skeets, as they're calling them. I can't believe they're actually calling Blue Sky tweets skeets. It's like no one listened to Little John in the 2000s. But yeah, so follow me wherever at Brian Intanap. And until next time, let's go Mets.